ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm David Claughton with you for A Big Country. Let's catch up with our reporters on the road in regional Australia. This week, putting theory into practice, we'll meet university agriculture students who are getting out of the lab and onto the land. They're visiting farms to see how their study plays out in practice. We'll visit a church congregation where the new priest is turning heads. Her tattoos, pink hair and motorbike may not be what the parishioners were expecting, but she's using her varied life experience to help others in the community. And we'll meet a pint-sized publican who's proving a draw card and a social media star. At just 142 centimetres tall, grandmother Barb Parkinson is helping her daughter run a small town pub on the Queensland coast. And she's posing for photos with passing tourists who come from all over Australia for a selfie.
I actually feel like a grommet, especially when I only come up to like their waist. I'm getting used to it now, but do have people come out of their way just so they can get their photo taken with a really short granny.
We'll meet Barb, the tiny publican. That's coming up. First today, across remote Australia, hundreds of thousands of wild camels are considered feral pests, with many shot and left to rot. But on a farm in southeast Queensland's Scenic Rim, camels are being milked to make cheese, skincare products and vodka, while their meat is being used in a range of cuts, including salamis. And the humped mammals are attracting thousands of tourists to the farm every year. Reporter Jennifer Nichols spoke with Paul Martin of Summerland Camels to hear how the venture came about.
Around 2010, we were doing a big camel cull in Australia. The government was throwing a lot of money at it, and people were asking, why can't we do something with these amazing animals? And we put a project together, and here we are. This was a fully start from scratch project where we go, well, how can we domesticate feral camels for a start? So before we could go and raise capital, we sort of really needed to tick that box. So we bought in about 20 camels out at Lowood, where we leased a property, started to domesticate them and then milk them, and the yields were reasonable. So we thought, well, okay, we can now expand from here and sort of tap into that dairy intolerant market and that health market for camels. The idea was to sort of try and set something up close to a capital city. So we had the milk and the products that we could make from it. We used some seed capital to start. One of our investors funded a farm that we're at now. We had a crowd behind us, so we raised about $9 million to get to that point where we made our skincare products and cheese and got that into the marketplace. Then we raised probably another $2 million through crowdfunding, and that's sort of a mechanism where you're harnessing your crowd that are following you and like what you do and all the rest of it, and then they'll invest in your company. So it's not floated on the stock exchange, it's still a private company, but they can invest and get shares like you do normally, but then also get discounts for products and stuff like that.
What's the good thing about camel milk?
It's the only mammal milk that people with dairy allergies can have for a start. So from an environmental point of view, as this movement sort of looks at a lot of the environmental impacts of nut milks and things like that with their heavy use of water and stuff, so going back to an adaptable animal, which is a camel's the most adaptable animal on the planet, that it can produce a milk for people that is of a health benefit as opposed to just a carrier for a cereal. So that's how we sort of started.
Okay, and since then, gosh, I was just listening to your speech, staggered at the products that you can make from a camel. The vodka, for example.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look back at the products we've made, but you know, all our heads around trying to, okay, what can we make with camel milk that gives it shelf life? So the skincare products and then shelf stability with cheeses. You know, a lot of people say, oh, camel milk, I don't like it, but cheese, you know, you can half rotten a cheese and people will still eat it, you know. So you know, having a cheese.
Stinky cheese.
Yeah, that's
good,
right.
Stinky cheese.
So, you know, cheese is an amazing way to get people just interested to go, oh, is that camel really? And then it was like, well, we got whey left over. What do we do here? What can we do with it? That's where the vodka idea came up. You know, around 800 litres of whey will produce about 110 litres of alcohol, and then that's about 200 litres of vodka.
And are you doing that all on site?
So we do the brewing side of it, which takes about 14 to 20 days, depending on the time of year. Then we send that 800 litres in to get distilled.
How many camels do you have, and how are you running them, and where are you running them?
Our farm at Paraswell, so we've got 400 camels there. There's probably 50 odd in our tourism riding team. team, and then the rest are dairy camels and progeny coming through, so young females that we're keeping. So we're milking probably 70 camels. We've got another 30 that are about to give birth, so you know that'll get us up to about 100 by the end of the year.
And it's a bit different to cows too, because you allow the calves to stay with the mums.
Yeah, so the calves need to be at this stage with the mums. Like, the camels can hang on to their milk. They've got to express it. So you've got to look after them pretty well. And we take the calves off in the afternoon and we milk them. So we're milking once a day, and then the calf gets the rest of the milk for that day.
Your cost of production's higher. How much does it cost at the shops?
Ranges anywhere between $16 and $20 a litre. You know, that's a challenging thing for people, especially with the low-cost milk that has been out for the last few years. But then a lot of your gut health supplements and yogurts, people will pay way more than that per litre for something that actually, that's what traditional people use camel milk for. So it's about a little bit of a branding story that we've got to try and educate people on.
Meat and meat products. When did you start venturing down that front?
Yeah, probably about 3 years ago. And our camels go generally, because they're so quiet, once they've spent 14 months in the dairy, they generally go out as pets. But we're also harvesting more females, and we get all these other camels. So we really wanted to try and engage other farmers to run these camels. So they'll run them out in Western Queensland to control prickly acacia and Parkinsonia and all that sort of thing, if they've got a way to sell them at some point.
Overseas camel meat is eaten a lot. What sorts of products are you doing?
We're marketing premium cuts to restaurants and supplying what they need, but then what do we do with the rest? So we've got all this trim and all the rest of it left over. So we've got charcuterie products. We've won a gold medal in Sydney with our pepper salami. So
congratulations.
I think a silver for our beer sticks down there. So we're using Schultz's at Plainlands, again, another local guys that specialise in preserved meat.
And agritourism is a big part of your model too, to try to introduce more people to the camel. How's that going?
We get a 60,000 people a year now through the farm, so it's amazing, and it's a great way to introduce people to a domesticated camel. You know, most people, even if they've had anything to do with camels, they've probably done it over in Dubai and some cranky camel that they've had to ride in this desert that's sick of tourists. You know, the camels we've got are just amazing, like grass-eating Labradors. So people come, they feed them over the fence, and they can go for a camel ride or go and see some baby camels. And then the view out where we are is quite amazing as well.
Pauline Harley takes off her motorbike helmet and walks into church. She swaps her leather jacket for white robes and prepares for the service.
I have been stopped once when I've been riding with my collar on. There was a double take from the police officer who was doing the breath test.
Reverend Harley's arrival was a bit of a surprise to the more conservative churchgoers at Toowoomba West Parish. Phoebe Mitchell has been attending St Albans for 20 years.
We hadn't had a minister for some considerable time. Pauline's arrival was a shock to some people. One, because she was female, and two, because of her hair. And she wasn't as orthodox as everybody else is. So unfortunately, one of the upshots of it was that we did lose some of our people who didn't believe in having women as ordained ministers.
I think originally in their minds they were getting a man, a male priest, because that's all they've ever had and known, and realised that I was tattooed and pink hair. That first service here was a little bit of a shock to some people. I'm not worried about your lifestyle, who you are, young, old, disabled, not disabled. I think a church needs to look like its community.
Welcome, Lee, to our service. Welcome to St Albans.
Reverend Harley didn't grow up in the church. Far from it, in fact.
I grew up with not a very good family life. So my mum, what I believe now, probably had what's recognised as severe mental illness, because of past trauma in her life, and she didn't make her a very good parent. She was addicted to all sorts of things, starting off from the cigarettes to caffeine to codeine. Because of those obsessions, she neglected us, and she went from boyfriend to boyfriend. And because she swam in those circles, I was abused every which way. So one of her boyfriends, the then boyfriend at the time, decided he didn't want kids around. And I came home one day and there was a box on the sidewalk of my stuff with the note, don't come back.
Pauline spent 6 months living homeless. Eventually, she ended up moving to Australia with her then husband.
And we thought by coming to Australia, we could leave all our problems behind as well. Unfortunately, gambling came with him and there was casinos here. And so as a Kiwi, I couldn't receive any government benefits, so I had to find a way to work.
She worked a variety of jobs, in a fish and chip shop, Danish bakery, muffin shop, and then in IT, literally building computers. While studying in TAFE, her teacher mentioned there was work at a local church office.
Thought, I've been in hospitality for so long, I'll give it a go.
It was there she met Reverend David Cox, a man who became a friend, a mentor, and the person she calls her Aussie dad.
So nervous, because I've not been around that sort of person before. And he was just this gentle, kind man, and he saw a broken person, and he was willing to give me a go. Yeah, and next thing you know, I'm at church every Sunday.
For the first time, Pauline felt a purpose, a higher calling.
There was this little thing in me, that voice, I believe to be the voice of God, saying, I want you to look at ordained ministry. And I was going, no way, and tried to run away from that. Tried to get into doing border security for some stupid reason. But every corner I took, God slammed that back, I believe, and was like, no, you're doing this.
At the age of 40, having never graduated high school, she decided to become an ordained Anglican priest.
One of my things I say to people is that you can't change your past. You can then make a choice, though, for yourself. And through the healing workshops and through the counselling that I did, my choice was A, let my past forever dictate me in a negative way, or to use it in a positive way going forward in the future. So in my ministry now, I do have a passion for homelessness and those who are less fortunate.
Since Reverend Harley became the priest in charge for the Toowoomba West Parish, there's been some changes. Phoebe Mitchell says they're now more involved than ever in volunteering and social justice.
It wasn't an area this parish had ever touched. We're really fortunate to have someone like Pauline who introduces and challenges us to step outside our comfort zones as well. Pauline's real. Pauline's not doesn't put herself above anybody else. She's one of us. She's one of everybody, preaches and teaches through her life experience, which hasn't been easy.
The purple bike parked outside St. Albans is unique and distinctive, just like its owner, who's happy her married name is so appropriate.
I've always loved bikes, and I've always wanted a motorbike. I've always wanted a Harley, even before I became a Harley.
Beyond being known as the motorbike riding priest, Reverend Harley wants her legacy to be one of service to the less fortunate.
For me, it's important that I show parishioners actions are just as important in our faith journey. I just pray for our city, that more and more people would step out of their comfort zones and help in our community.
That's Reverend Pauline Harley. She was speaking to reporter Grace Nakamura. And you can read more of Pauline's story. You'll find the article on the ABC website. Just search for Motorbike Priest. I'm David Claughton with you for A Big Country. Still to come, we'll meet grandmother publican Barb Parkinson, who's earned a nickname as the Granny from the Yanny, working behind the bar at the Yandaran Hotel in regional Queensland. And we'll catch up with PhD students from the Sydney Institute of Agriculture who ditched their lab coats to get out amongst the cattle, sheep and crops across rural New South Wales to gain first-hand experience of life on the land. Reporter Lara Webster met up with the students and Professor Thomas Roberts, who says the trip is eye-opening for some international students who haven't spent much time on farms.
To get those students, particularly the overseas students who don't know that much about Australia yet, because some of them have only arrived here a month ago, to learn more about Australian agriculture and what we do compared to their home countries, that's really important. So we give them this opportunity to come on a three-day excursion and they get to see some farms and some factories, some research stations, all that kind of thing on the trip. And they come away with, a broader knowledge of Australian agriculture and the kind of context of what we do compared to the rest of the world.
How important is it that they come out of the lab, I guess, or out of their university classrooms, out into the space? And this is such, I suppose, a diverse region as well. How important is it for that to experience?
Yeah, I mean, we get fantastic feedback at the end of this excursion, which we run every year, by the way, and we go to a different region in New South Wales every year. Yeah, so a lot of them, as you hinted there, they're stuck in the lab. I shouldn't say stuck. They're in the lab enjoying their, you know, biochemistry or their plant pathology, for example, or they're doing modelling on a computer. Some of them are doing quite a lot of field work already, but there's no way that they would otherwise be able to access, you know, a sheep farm and a beef, two beef farms and, you know, a research institute all in the space of a few days. It would be very hard for them to organise that themselves in any way.
My name is Damilola Karim, but you can call me Dami.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm working with chicken nutrition, trying to find sustainable ways to produce chickens and also reducing the negative impact of reduced protein diets in chicken nutrition.
My name is Kai Sin. I'm from Singapore, and I'm currently doing research on a novel horticultural production system, and very, very happy to be on this trip.
Let's just start with this trip. The last two or three days, what you've seen?
Oh, it's been a lot, yeah, and wonderful. For this year, we've been to a cattle farm, so we were able to meet the owners, Juan and Dr. Sabrina, who is also fortunately a member of staff at the University of Sydney. So we've been able to learn how the things are done here in Australia, you know, compared to how it is in my country. So that has been a very eye-opener for me. We also went to the farm where the plants are cuttings. So that was a really good one. It's like 1,200 hectares, I guess. Yeah, which was really huge. And they took us around. So it's really good. And we are here today to see the different equipment of how they do all the seed planting, seed breeding, the technology they're using, making the seed better for us, because it's really, especially here, is really, really, I was really interested here because, you know, in chicken nutrition, livestock nutrition generally, we depend more on the cereals and legumes. Mm. So, you know, to know how the improvement of the breeds have been done is a really good opportunity for me.
Kai, what about you?
Well, I come from a country with almost zero agriculture production. So more than 90% of our food is imported. So I've been very impressed with the depth of the agriculture industry here in Australia. Looking at the various research facilities and the investments that were made to improve the yield or to research into diseases, better livestock, it's just something that just blows my mind, because, you know, I've really not come across that kind of research being done in the past. So I think that it's really a very big eye-opener for me in terms of the experience, in terms of the exposure. Yeah.
Jaime Ruiz Serra. I'm doing a PhD in complex systems under the School of Computer Science at the University of Sydney.
So I'm Julia, and I think you can say it like feet, but it's spelled F like Foxtrot, W-E-T-H.
You've done that before.
Yes, too many times.
And what are you studying?
I'm doing a PhD in microplastics in soil.
Wow, okay. The last 3 days, tell me what you've been seeing and what you've been learning.
Really, I think, yeah, something quite impactful to me was the scale of operations compared to the size of labor that's required. Like, for instance, one of the farms, they had 1,300 heads of sheep, but it was only the parents and their daughters that looked after the farm, and only on the weekends, which to me that was mind-blowing, because I thought you needed a full-time kind of operation. And yeah, to me that was really eye-opening, and it kind of made me even more wish that I could have a farm one day.
What about you, Julia? Tell me about your experience so far.
So two things I would say stood out to me. Yesterday we went to see a sheep farmer, and I had no idea that it is so profitable for sheep farmers in Australia. That was really interesting for me to hear. And also the cattle farm we went to first, I had no idea that they make such an effort in terms of animal welfare. And I thought it was lovely to hear about. I really like that.
So what were your thoughts? I mean, we all have these ideas of everything in life when we haven't seen it. You know, we have a picture in our head, and there's so much in the media that we hear. What did you think about some of those things before you actually got out on the farm?
So I've been to the United States before, and there you see the cattle like really close together in like really sad looking farms. And I thought, no one here cares either. So, but it was nice to see, like, because yeah, I had a more not so animal friendly picture in my head, I would say. But it was really good. Like, they tried to not even take the cattle away from the farm for until they sell it, really. So it was really good. And they said that they also eat their own meat, so it's very sustainable in that way. That was great. Yeah.
For almost 30 years, Barb Parkinson worked as a nurse, on her feet, caring for patients and meeting new people every day. Now, at 71 and in semi-retirement, her role is a little different.
She is just such a cute little ray of sunshine. The second we met her, I felt like she was my granny as well, honestly.
I lost my mother a few years ago, and granny is like a mother to me.
Oh, she's so cute. As soon as she saw me, she hugged me, and like she's very welcoming.
Those are just some of the people who have come to love the 142-centimetre firecracker known as the Granny from the Yanni. Barb is the co-owner of the Yandaran Hotel, a short drive north of Bundaberg along the Queensland coast. The nickname came about after a joke with one of the regulars.
We've got a local here, and his name is Lyle, and all the boys are at one end of the pub, like after work, and he turned out and he says, "Did you hear Barb gets on Tinder?" I says, "No, I don't." And he says, "Oh, yes, she does." And she goes by the name of the Granny from the Annie. And of course, Alicia caught on, so she said she's going to do a bit of stirring.
Alicia is daughter Alicia Smith, and it was her idea to buy this small country pub in the first place.
I saw it actually on Facebook. My mother actually, she was working 20 hours a fortnight, and she needed to retire as a 69-year-old woman. And it was my husband who actually said, "It'd be great for your mum to come and buy a pub."
At first, Barb wasn't convinced about her daughter's retirement plan.
She said to me, "Have you ever thought of retiring and owning a pub?" And I said, "No, why would I?" I says, "I don't even drink."
"So I won't be busy, Mum. You'll be able to just come out at the end of the bar and just serve people every now and then."
So Alicia and her husband made the move 30 minutes out of town to become co-owners of the pub alongside Barb. And it was a bit of a steep learning curve, especially for Barb, who doesn't even drink alcohol.
I used to have to ask people what colour can it was, or I had no idea. I don't know some of the cans that have got alcohol in it. I'm not sure what sort of alcohol it is in. I've got to read them up all.
And her nursing skills were still being put to use, even as a publican.
People come here with cuts and things like that. I've taken a few to hospital. Yeah, they're like an extended family. I worry about them if I haven't seen them. And they need to tell me if they go on holiday so I don't fret or think something's happened.
Word quickly spread about the Granny from the Yanni, and now Barb has become somewhat of a social media celebrity, posing with tall patrons who tower over her.
It's a little bit overwhelming. Behind the bar, that's my comfort zone. I can talk to anybody. But the other side of the bar, I feel like I'm right out of my comfort zone.
The pint-sized publican now has people diverting travel plans to pay her a visit, and they come from across Australia and as far away as Europe.
I actually feel like a grommet, especially when I only come up to like their waist. But yeah, no, it's I'm getting used to it now, but do have people come out of their way just so they can get their photo taken with a really short granny.
Barb has her own line of merch, Granny from the Yanni t-shirts, coasters and mugs. Hundreds of people attended the pub's 125th birthday celebrations, which included a best dressed granny competition in honour of the star publican. For daughter Alicia, who had no idea that a retirement plan to buy a country pub in Queensland would end up making her mum semi-famous, she's really proud.
She's a little firecracker, that's for sure. And a hard worker. Like, there's nothing for her on a Tuesday when the delivery of alcohol comes through and she's throwing around cartons. She's a real goer. Like, and you can't stop her. You can't stop her.
That's Alicia Smith, new owner of the Yandarin Hotel near Bundaberg in Queensland. She was talking about her mum, Barb Parkinson, who's taken a career change from nursing to help her run the pub. And you can see more on that story, including photos of Barb posing next to some of the pub's taller patrons who tower above her. You'll find that story on the ABC homepage. Head to abc.net.au and search for The Granny Publican. That's the show for today. I'm David Claughton, and I'll be back next week with more great stories from beyond the cities. I'll chat to you then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.